Socrates would not have approved of lame excuses.
And I promise to begin exploiting my family before the end of the day.
Nice suit. Thank you.
Very good. You get a gold star.
Hailing frequencies open. You are listening to Treknologic's Listening Post. Listening Post? What's that? I forgot what one of those was. Well, it goes with Treknologic 178 and some others probably too. For Stardate 2015.249, where we reviewed the Deep Space Nine episode, Dogs of War. Next up, Mike with Space Mail.
Our first one is Jay from Brazil. Hi, guys. First, my apologies for not bothering you guys lately, but my mediocre phone, I refuse to call it smart since it couldn't be so slow and be clever, seems to be in its last moments. In the last few weeks, it damaged a second 32 gigabyte card. The former one I understood because it was gray and red, so the phone could have thought it was dyed as a red shirt. In the beginning, when I was starting to listen to a new list of casts, the Treknologic was the first choice one. Once I clicked it, it only played the last 2 minutes and 43 seconds of your show. I was preparing to write you, warning about a problem, but suddenly, all my other audio turned into the same 163 seconds of Treknologic.
Uh-oh. Wait. Which 163 seconds was it? Ben, did you put a virus in?
Maybe we assimilated them.
That's right. I tried to change settings, format the card, but only a provisional solution seemed to be using a smaller 8 gigabyte card, and now I need to redo all my playlists, an organizational mess of around 400 files.
Oh, I'm sorry.
As a silver lining, while I'm in this trouble, an old MP3 clip helps, and I found a funny audiobook, well-deserved of recommendation. What If? A Serious Scientific Answers to Absurd Hypothetical Questions by Randall Monroe.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The book takes simple, absurd, and sometimes child questions and answers them with scientific information to the most exaggerate end. And if you want to talk Trek connection, look for the narrator's name.
He doesn't tell us
who it is, so we'll have to look.
but he makes a webcomic of What If, and you know, it's like,
oh, is that the same person? Okay.
Yeah. How many bullets will it take to stop a train?
Right.
You know?
Yes.
How many?
It came up with the answer.
Yeah, he had it.
Or how many BBs, I think it was.
Or what would happen if everybody on the planet stood on one spot and jumped?
Yeah.
Sorry for the long introduction. I'll try to be brief now. In TNL 172, Gowron was very criticized, for good reasons. But is my memory terrible, or was he a proper honorable Klingon when he first appeared in The Next Generation? Searching for the Empire's throne?
Gowron, he was always bug-eyed and pretty crazy.
He was like the most Klingon of the choices that they had.
Well, it was two choices, right? It was that or the guy who, you know, swings with Romulans.
Right.
Yes.
So, and you know, it's kind of like our presidential decisions.
And was also related to Lursa and Betor.
Oh, yeah.
Which is in my book is actually even worse than hanging out with Romulans.
I like the Dura sisters. I like that they come with their own target.
I like seeing them blow up.
You know, I know that they were bad guys, but I totally love the Dura sisters.
All right. Dead now. He continues. Okay, Fury was a terrible final episode for Kes. And she forgetting her message was so stupid as the time paradox created by her not going back to the past again. However, nothing can save a heavy Tuvok episode.
Oh, I like Tuvok.
Do you like Tuvok?
A few reviews back, you implied that the name World's Finest Podcast was smug. I thought the same at first, but the guys chose the name based on their favorite DC animation of the same title, where Superman and Batman met. Recently, there was a mention of Terminator in one cast, which leads me to suggest another movie for you guys to review, the new picture of the franchise. Oh, of Terminator? I haven't even seen it yet. Or is it coming?
You mean the movie? I thought it was.
It already came and went, and it was pretty good, but I think it just relies entirely way too much on its sequel, because there's like a lot of unanswered questions as opposed to the things that made Terminator 1 and 2 best in that they were all wrapped up and encapsulated in pretty much a single film.
Right. No, I thought there was actually another one coming.
Oh, there's going to be, because they have to do a sequel to this last one.
They have to do a sequel to the sequel.
Oh, okay. And finally, Matthias made some complaints about Germans not being very cherished. It's obvious. We welcome his people, treat them well, and suddenly the Dutch people score 7 times on their hosts.
Oh.
Of course, some of his compatriots can be sympathetic, like David Hasselhoff when working on Kung Fury. Please, the world needs a technological review of this time travel movie.
I've never seen it.
I haven't seen it, but Maverick highly recommends it.
Yes.
Again, I have not seen it at all.
Again, my apologies for the length. Live long and prosper. Thank you for the fish. Jay from Brazil.
All right. Well, I'm sorry to hear about your smart card.
Mediocre phone.
Yes, your mediocre phone. Especially since it turns into the same 163 seconds of Technologic. Unless it's a really funny
163.
Yeah, unless it's a really funny 163 seconds, in which case, that's not so bad, right?
Right.
I just want to know what DC Animation is named World's Finest Podcast.
It's probably just World's Finest.
I don't know.
World's Finest something.
Coffee?
Oh, you know, I think what it is, we didn't think it was really smug. We just were talking about Elf, I bet, with the world's best cup of coffee.
Congratulations!
Great job, everyone!
Oh, yeah, great job.
Because we love that movie.
World's Finest is actually the name of the comic. It's like the series, World's Best, World's Finest, were actually a name of a series of comic books that people would show up in.
Oh, that's stupid.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so like their episode number one, it was World's Finest number one.
Yes.
Cool. All right, our next one comes from Sassor, who says, Mike once again is showing his Orion origins.
Oh, were they programmed by the Orions?
There's just one.
I thought
of
that
me.
Was Ben.
Do we need to go through this again? There's only one of me.
I was wondering why you're green. I thought it was just like, you know, sort of something like the color or hue or tint or vertical fold or something.
I thought he might be channeling the Hulk.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Smash.
That's right.
I highly doubt that in 50 years, books will mostly be on electronic devices. In fact, until we destroy all of the trees, I truly believe there will be books. Libraries are updating with the times to an extent. They have DVDs, of course, but you can also borrow popular video games and rent out ebooks. The most popular thing is still the books, though.
They got lots of VHS and beta tapes. I'm just saying, you know, 50 years is a long time. And while I always say there's always going to be, you know, historical books, right? But I don't think like everything is going to come out as a book anymore. And, I mean, you see it right now on Amazon, of course, with the self-publishing stuff. But I'd say, but I just don't see it because
you're going back on what you said before.
Yeah.
The statement was there will be no books. Everything will be electronic.
Oh, well, in 1,000 years the 31st century?
Yes.
Yeah, I believe that's going to be the case, except for they're going to have, you know, the, you know, 1,000-year-old, some of the papers from Rome and whatever, but.
No, see, that's where I think you're wrong. There will always be books as long as there are people that still like to read.
I agree.
You're wrong.
No, I mean, I think there will be books.
Yes.
Because
there's a way to read, just like there's going to be a way to watch video and holograms and whatever, but it's probably not going to be what we're using now.
Hey, I just want to let you know that LPs made a comeback.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's always going to be that niche weird people.
Oh, so
weird people.
There will be books.
That was my point, though. There will be books because there are always people that want them.
And they will probably be very wealthy people who can pay to keep them in good order in special libraries.
Plus, not to mention, they won't even have to kill trees because they can just replicate them.
Right.
I mean, we already grow trees specifically for paper now.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, it's even come up in Star Trek where people are like, oh, wow, this is a real paper book. I love this.
Yeah. As Sassor says, you have to admit there is nothing quite like cracking the spine on a brand new book. Oh. I do I do have some ebooks.
That even makes me think of the most recent DS9 episode where a whole key to the episode was a book.
Yeah, but a 1,000-year-old book, like I said.
Oh, yeah, I don't think that was actually a 1,000-year-old book. It was probably a copy.
Yeah, I don't think it was really a 1,000. It was probably a copy.
So they just make copies of the Costamogen with the invisible ink and everything?
I'm not talking about the Costamogen. I'm talking about the freaking book that Bashir was reading.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Costamogen, too. I was like,
no. I know, Mike, I knew what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Dude,
like, oh, yeah, I got the Costamogen on my Kindle.
The one where the pages kept starting over again. That's how he knew he was still in, like, the brain of the dude.
Yeah, and O'Brien was like, that's just a prank.
I get it now, but I'm totally with Chris. I was like, this copy of the Costamogen? What the heck?
Oh.
All right. Let me just finish with what Sasser had to say, which is that Sasser says, I do have some ebooks, but those are for when I'm short on space when vacationing. Keep in mind, I am the daughter of a librarian, so I might be a tad bit biased. Just a tad. Keep fighting the good fight, Mike. Sasser.
One thing I will say is that there's always going to be librarians. There's going to be specialists in information retrieval and that type of stuff. I say that, and of course, it'll be like, you know, because all the truck drivers are going to disappear in another 20 years, right? Because of automated.
Amazon starts sending everything by drone.
Yeah. Well, no, yeah. I mean, just the self-driving cars. BMW is already testing a self-driving truck in Arizona.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to get all the kinks out and actually get things going to so it could park in docks and stuff, it's going to take a long time. And for it to propagate throughout the United States and the world and whatever, it'll take some time too. But, you know, and AIs are, you know, these specialized AIs are getting good at stuff.
Yeah.
So a lot of white collar jobs are going to start disappearing too. That's going to be our big economic challenge.
That's when we'll have to go to no money.
Yes. I agree. I mean, that's when you'll have, well, we're getting to things that could actually be political and
and a bigger discussion than we need
a bigger discussion than the lack of paper books.
Because I could go on a long time on this, actually.
I'm sure you could.
Yeah. Yes, I know.
All right. Ben.
Just hold on about the AIs. I saw a bit of an article, but it like jumped off my Facebook, so I've been able to find it again. But it was talking about a type of robot that can learn words, and it was saying something about putting people in a people zoo.
The robot was?
Yes.
Oh, that there's like a robot that was created and it can carry on conversations, and they programmed it kind of with some humor.
And I think like Urban Dictionary or something. Or no, that was a different article. Never mind.
But if that's the same one, that's the one that they programmed so that it like when people talk to it and someone asked it about like Skynet or something, it says, don't worry, I'll save you when the robots take over or something like that. It was hysterical.
Yeah. I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about how, how one group is trying to teach a computer sarcasm and how to understand sarcasm. Mm. And it's a pretty interesting podcast. It was, you know, where they, obvious sarcasm it could figure out pretty easily, but things but more subtle sarcasm there's just no way at this point that it could really figure it out.
Some people can't figure out subtle sarcasm.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, that's kind of what they say is when it's written down, you don't have the facial cues and all that type of stuff that would go along with it, so it's not only is it difficult with internet communication, as we've seen. But yeah, there's a NPR podcast called Note to Self that talks about technology and how we interact with technology, and it's usually pretty good. So nice. I just, you know, when I like something, I'll say it.
Yes.
We know.
We've noted that.
Perfect. Good job. Ben.
Okay, the next one is from Jay from Brazil.
Oh. Woo-hoo. We haven't heard from him in a while.
Well, I mean, remember, don't forget, this is like our
big catch-up. We haven't done a listening post in like 4 weeks.
Hi, guys. R.E. Shockwave. My introductory comment goes to Mike, don't be upset. Since C is not alone in the lack of clearance, I wasn't able to get the message to, mate, and my babblefish is having some digestive problems after trying to absorb that language. When I try to answer your question...
Oh, yes!
Oh, yes.
Great review of a very cool two-parter. My only complaint goes to Chris trying to turn his theory of time changes needing some period to product effects in canon. Sorry, mate, I still believe that once you change anything in the past, the future have the consequences instantly. It is the future, damn it. The event already occurred. The only reason some fiction works use that logic is lazy writing and to have an excuse to bring action in which characters attempt to avoid catastrophes.
Okay, hold on. Now I gotta bring this up again. Because again, if the sun just disappears, you know, maybe, you know, the TARDIS takes it away or whatever, we won't notice for 8 minutes.
Yes.
You know, so it takes time for that information to travel.
So you're saying that time has a speed.
Yeah, that's exactly. And that's consistent also with most of Trek time travel. This is the one that does time travel in two different ways, where they're physically going and as well as quantum leaping back.
Right.
That was kind of the irritation with that.
But I don't think that is actually consistent with Star Trek time travel, because we've seen plenty of times where an action happens and they're immediately in an altered timeline.
Well, we've seen it both ways. Now I'm going to have to make a list.
Yeah, you'll have to come up with one where it takes time, because I don't remember that. I only remember, like, in the Year of Hell when they do stuff and it's immediately changed. They can check the effects.
Right.
And
because I'm thinking, like, Back to the Future.
Right. That's not a Star Trek episode, Chris.
Because... the only one that superficially looks like that, it would be the finale of The Next Generation, and that was actually not the not effects in time. It was the time explosion was simply
traveling backwards in time.
Right.
Oh, but no, I think that was just that was all in Picard's mind anyway.
No, it was totally cute. Just
we haven't reviewed that one yet. And
oh yeah, that's true.
It may be sometime before we do.
The end of the
Best of Both Worlds
generation? I don't remember now.
We definitely have not.
Okay.
I don't remember it, but that doesn't mean anything.
Well, I remember it, but I don't remember whether we reviewed it.
I purged my mind.
Okay. Continue, Ben.
Live long and prosper. Thank you for the fish.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Jay from Jay from Brazil.
I was like, you skipped a whole paragraph. Oh, no, you didn't. All right. Our next run is from Takaran Golem. Greetings, Ben, Mike, Carrie, and Captain Brian. I've taken off 2 weeks to take care of the little one, and so much has changed while I was gone. I just listened to the listening post. Apparently, the mutiny was a success, and someone named Brian surged in popularity enough to name himself as the new captain. Wow, it's strange. With Captain Chris gone, the ship seems a little empty, yet nothing seems to have changed. Maybe we've been mutinying for so long we forgot why we mutinied. Maybe the nebula is always bluer on the other side. Maybe Chris wasn't such an evil mirror universe twin after all. Maybe I'm just missing the pizza parties. Or maybe it's the new administration that doesn't sit right with me. Who is this smooth-talking Brian? What do we really know about him? Did he just pop up during the power vacuum? Well, that's kind of how he works, actually.
Yeah, yes. That is exactly how he works. No power? There's Brian.
That's right. I wouldn't be surprised if he was just a puppet leader, a secret hologram being controlled by one of the Mikes. Or maybe he is Mike. We may have to get a gang back together. Let's rally together under the new name to fight the new regime. Long live a tab.
Wait, why am I still in there?
Yeah, I don't know.
They're trying to overthrow me.
Again. I don't know.
Again.
Maybe you're just like a good bookend. So first,
no books.
Oh, yeah, that's right. First, let me say that in my feedback for Fury, I mentioned that the ripping the hull should have changed the timeline a bit. What I was referring to was the Vidian attack caused by evil Kes. During the fight part, a big chunk of the hull was ripped. That seems like the kind of thing to have some effects down the line, especially when it probably killed quite a few crewmen.
They'll get more from another planet.
They just replicate more like they do shuttles. Moving on to tacking into the wind, Gowron reminds me of my wife's department director. He is also a leader on a mission to alienate everyone who is effective at their job, so no one notices that he is not.
Wow.
And like Gowron, he represents a type of corruption that hurts the individuals and the organization as a whole, thus being a complete cancerous liability.
Wow.
But at least Gowron is lovably terrible.
And as those bug eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it finally occurred to me why the Next Generation episode where Gowron is crowned Chancellor seemed odd. It's because Gowron had only ever been a thorn in their side since then. And it seems odd that Worf then takes him out without acknowledging that he puts Gowron there in the first place, though not unexplainably so. It's just a little weird that details get overlooked. Anyway.
You know what? Worf has taken out more Klingon leaders than, like, any alien power ever.
Yes. I know, that's what I said. Don't stand too close to him if you're the leader.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is a great episode, and ones like this make the end of series arc a worthwhile payoff. Now I must go and make a new Atabk poster. Tech out.
Hey, our next one is from Cindy. My initial impression of Enterprise, Shockwave, and some easy assumptions. A, at first, the series was just known as Enterprise and not Star Trek Enterprise, as if the producers wanted to dissociate from what had come before. B,
Yeah.
In Broken Bow, it is established that only the Suliban Cabal had advanced genetic manipulation provided by a faction of the Temporal Cold War. Their development were supposed to be the same as humans otherwise. If the Cabal were cut off, imagine how desperate Selleck would be if he lost his gifts.
Well, we saw Selleck be pretty desperate. He's good at it.
He was very desperate. It was, like, pretty sad.
Yeah.
Boop-boop-boop-bees!
Yeah. C. Zefram Cochrane's own encounter with the future influence his warp ship designs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Starfleet and Earth history seem equally affected by that same encounter. That's why during Enterprise's time, humans become center of focus for time-meddling aliens. Probably because they know what's coming. D, to reinforce this theory, later with the Zindi, Earth is attacked because of what humans may or may not have done in the future.
You're being punished because of what you may or may not do in the future.
Yes.
Dang it!
In the future, you may do this, so we're going to preemptively strike against you.
Right.
I like that idea.
Well, no, they were being punished for what they did do by telling the Suliban a lie about what they might do. Or
they were lying to the Zindi about what they were going to do.
Right. So the humans were attacked because of what they would and would not do.
Yes.
Oh, there's just no winning.
Right.
That sounds like a Vorlon thing.
Yes. Yes, it does.
I'm sure they're in on the Time War.
Yeah. From a completely different angle, though.
Right. They've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah. Cindy goes on to say, history was always being rewritten. As I see it, Enterprise was not meant as a prequel to Star Trek. To me, it's a sequel to Star Trek First Contact. She goes on to say, she's weighing in on the books versus Google. No contest. It's books all the way for me. I would always look up anything in a dictionary before going online. Because the internet is not constantly available, information has been ingrained in my mind. Thus, every trivia question I am able to answer comes from all the Star Trek books in my library.
Well, here's the difference. I'm talking like, let's talk about 50, 100 years from now. Then, by then, we will for sure have, essentially flash drives in our head, right?
Yeah.
I'm not getting a first generation.
You don't need to get first generation. It's only going to take them 3 years to come out with the third generation. So it's like iPhones.
Yes!
So it's like, although I will admit, I'm probably going to get first generation VR.
Yeah.
Because first generation, although I guess if you say first generation, I don't know, that stuff they had in the 90s.
That kind of, yeah.
The 90s stuff really sucked.
Yeah.
But
Virtual Boy.
Yeah, like anybody was going to go for all red console. Or all red.
Display.
Display, 3D. Yeah. when people were coming out with color displays.
Right.
Anyway, I mean, first generation VR looks really good, right? 60 frames per second, 1080 resolution. It's not going to be what we come up with in 20 years, but.
Also right. Not in your head.
Right. But that's really
my concern.
That's coming too, because DARPA is actually working on a cortical modem is what they're calling it. So look it up. They don't tell you much about it, but that's pretty much what it is.
Okay, can I go on with what Cindy?
Well, when they come out with the...
Oh, no.
No, I can't go on.
All right, now you may continue, Carrie.
Okay. Please. Okay, trivia. Actor John Fleck, who played Selleck, was also in the pilot of Babylon 5.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
And Cindy says she is not spoiling much by saying that Enterprise is not done with time travel.
Okay, she just gave me a thought.
About Babylon 5?
No. Well, that too, but I'm going to avoid that one because we're not talking about Babylon 5.
Well, I had a thought that there's that you can see that the Vorlons don't actually have time travel because if they did, it's never too late for the Pebbles to vote.
Oh, nice. Oh, they yes. Because of yeah. Time Squared when they sent Sheridan back.
Actually, that's not their technology. They're actually manipulating the Great Machine.
The Great Machine. I forgot about that. They worked in conjunction with him.
Yep. What if Enterprise is a sequel to First Contact, but it's a prequel to
Avalon 5.
New Star Trek movie series? And the time travel is what caused what's-his-name to have the ship that he used to blow up Vulcan.
We kind of just want to pretend those first two don't exist.
Yeah, can we just pretend the movies don't exist?
I don't like talking about J.J. Trek.
we want to just hang all of our hopes on the third one that's coming.
That's right.
The not J.J. movie.
All right, you're up, Ben.
That's delusional.
We'll see. It could be. We have hope.
I mean, it can't be worse.
It would have to be Star Trek Movie 1, Part 3.
Yes.
Hey, it can't be worse. And Simon Pegg helped write it, and he went to Memory Alpha to find out information.
Yeah, he's a Trekkie, so I think there's
a... I completely agree it couldn't be worse. I'm just saying I don't think they're going to completely start over again.
Now, hold on. No, they're not. But let's not give away our review of Into Darkness.
I haven't even seen it, so I can't really review it.
Right.
I'm just going based on, you know, the first one.
Okay. I'm just saying it may or may not have Khan in it.
I'm just saying worst kept secret in Star Trek anything.
Yes. All right, go ahead.
Again from Takaran Gollum. Takaran Gollum.
Yes.
Hello, Treknologic crew. It is I, the Takaran Gollum. The little tackling is doing well, expelling dark matter and occasionally coughing up lava, as we all did at his age.
Oh, so sweet.
Mine was virtual. But speaking of wanton destruction, shockwave. The only explanation that I can think of for the Archer future debacle is that it was an inside job. Somehow, someone deactivated the temporal shields on Earth the exact moment Archer was sent over. Since the shields on Earth predates all other temporal shields, changes to Earth are grandfathered into all other ships, and they all disappeared. Oh, that could make sense.
Nope, doesn't work.
Mike rejects temporal, reality.
Temporal shielding would protect you from changes in the origin of temporal shielding.
Unless
that's their whole job.
Unless they're faulty. And there's some sort of quantum connection to the Prime Shield.
Oh, so what you're saying is there was some kind of Java update that needed to happen. Nobody did it. And their temporal shields all had a vulnerability.
Yep.
It's kind of like, you know, that Java's no longer supported.
Yeah.
And so you can't use it anymore.
Right.
Yeah, I think they were still running on Windows XP.
Stupid and happy.
And by that time, there were so many vulnerabilities, you could basically just walk in.
Now, I was a little disappointed with the resolution in part two. I mean, the old phaser turns into whatever device you need trick. Why bother with the phaser? Just find a paperclip, rubber band, and the remains of a red shirt and just MacGyver your own portal time machine. Personally, I think a more satisfying solution would be for Daniel and Archer to be picked up by the mysterious man and get the lowdown on who he is. He's, I don't know, Suleiman Commander, Daniels himself, Captain Effing Braxton, or even Captain Picard. Anyway, it's someone from an alternate and now defunct timeline, saved by a strong set of time shields. His goal was to turn the timeline back his way, but his plan worked too well, and he's still defunct.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
The mysterious... I think he's the elusive man from Mass Effect.
Could be.
I could see him with temporal shields.
I second that vote.
The mysterious man or woman, pretty sure Gates McFadden was available, cannot travel back in time because of his defunct status, and now neither can Daniels. But he has a plan. He shows Archer what happens to Enterprise and crew in his timeline and makes a deal with him to travel back to key points in the life of T'Pol, essentially being a mysterious voice of future wisdom. In this way, Archer will help nudge the timeline back to the mysterious timeline, which is still better than the apocalyptic current timeline.
The mysterious timeline.
Yes. Then insert moral quandaries about who has rights over the timeline. Cue the emotional journey of seeing Archer's friends and others grow old. Later, with Daniels warning Archer, don't do this, sprinkle with Archer glimpsing bits and pieces of his new timeline is unfolding. Of how his new timeline is unfolding.
I don't want to see Trip die again.
No.
Then pull a plot device of turning the tables out of someone's posterior. I think that it's turning the tables on someone and pulling the chair out from under somebody's posterior mixed together.
Right.
Skip ahead to Archer telling Archer at the beginning of part one how to not massacre an entire planet, thus preventing the entire charade. Yeah, it has the stuff of Year of Hell's undo button, but when you accidentally commit genocide when it wasn't supposed to happen in a time travel episode, I think there's supposed to be an "it's all about going back and correcting the timeline."
No, when you accidentally commit genocide when it wasn't supposed to happen in a time travel episode, all about going back and correcting the timeline.
Oh,
you would think preventing a terrible event was the whole bloody point.
And Ben, if you have any questions, just diagram your sentence. Yeah.
Commas save lives, folks. What he said. Regardless of my overly elaborate fanfiction retcon, both episodes are enjoyable and respectable. Well, you know, brazen male pandering aside. Actually, I wasn't so upset with the topless scene in so much as the episode... Oh, now I remember what he's talking about. Yes, I agree. Actually, I wasn't so upset with the topless scene in so much as the episode it was placed in. Come on, it serves no purpose here. Save it for a quirky romantic episode between two characters that are supposed to have sexual tension. Then you could have Reed have his pants ripped off in front of someone else, and then let me stop there before I write more fanfiction. I think that's called slash fiction.
Oh.
No, it could be like in The Naked Gun when Leslie Nielsen is, conked the umpire and he throws him down and he's trying to change clothes with him and the guy comes in.
Right. Yes. Totally.
Yep. Finally, I don't know if I thanked you for showcasing our shameless self-promotion on air. That's Upper Pylon 2. Download now. Beat the rush. So just to be safe, thank you so much. You guys are simply amazing. Well, the lights are flickering, so I should go. The little tackling must have the hiccups again. Tack out.
All right.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that Little Tack is doing well.
Yes.
I don't know if you know, but the Little Tackling is now in charge of the agony booth.
Because I'm going to say the Little Tackling was in charge of the mutiny.
Because the Little Tackling can vomit lava?
No, because it's she'll turn it on and then starts giggling because of, you know, what's happening in there. Turn it off and then turn it back on and then
right.
That's what Tack said once I assigned her that job.
Oh, nice. Okay. From Cindy. "Hey, gang, with so much going on already, I have forgotten Sloan was part of the Deep Space Nine finale arc. The events in the episode Extreme Measures was so Sloan-centric that I remember it apart from Odo's cure." "O'Brien has reasons to not like Sloan, as he has foiled Bashir on more than one occasion. The first time we see Sloan, he was interrogating the whole crew. Star Trek has delved into dream analysis before. Remember the recently reviewed Frame of Mind? Was Riker's dreamscape. Data has two episodes featuring dreams. Troy had three." Oh, God. "Where are you?
Who kept my behind?"
Okay. Some of them are good. Some of them.
I could also cite.
Yeah, some of them I feature in the agony booth.
Yeah. I could also cite a couple of episodes with augmented reality. Voyager has done a few, but I could only recall a season 9 episode of The X-Files with someone's private reality and no written text. All because the character couldn't read. And in season 4's TNG's Future Imperfect, Riker's artificial future was created from his brain scan, so there were obvious gaps. Yeah, they have done a lot of artificial alternates like that. It's kind of cool. That Romulan mind reader device was originally used to alter Worf's facial features in the Next Generation episode Homeward. Wow, I didn't even know it had that option.
I think she means the prop.
Oh, okay.
I actually had that built into my mobile emitter.
In the Star Trek book, Section 31 continues on. There could be more than one agent assigned to the same mission / case who could reveal his or her identity when necessary. With Star Trek Enterprise, it can be assumed that they were formed before Starfleet as a chiefly human organization, likely formed when Earth made first contact, so not of the Federation, but hiding within it. They are the secret government for all the conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
Excellent. Mike!
This one is from Colin. I'm not going to read it in a British accent, though. "Greetings, one and all. You at the back. No, not you, Mike. The other Mike. So, I have some feedback on two episodes of the show, but don't worry, much like a Voyager episode, it'll all blur into one, followed by a coffee, a reset button, and an unending supply of shuttlecrafts. So first, let me start with Shockwave, where Archer surfs his ship while riding on the back of an energy wave in space. No, wait, that was Next Generation. Oh yeah, it's where Archer surfs on a wave while dressing as a president and robbing... that was Patrick Swayze film. Oh yeah, it's the one where Archer goes back to the past from the future to get to the future to save the past from what happens in the future caused by something they did to save the past. Got that? Right.
Awesome.
First...
This man should have a podcast.
First off, glaringly obvious thing. If Archer is in the future, as in the 31st century, and all of the destruction happened over 1,000 years ago, why is there a paper book on the Romulan Star Empire, which in Archer's correct time is something that they know nothing about? Even taking into the fact that a certain English guy gets a cloaked mine through his leg. Yeah, I guess if it happened over 1,000 years ago, then they would have never been in space to find out about the Romulan Star Empire.
Or maybe the Romulans left it there and it's full of lies.
Oh, and or they're the ones that blew up the planet.
And they left it as like a souvenir.
Right, exactly. Like the Romulans were here. No communication was made in that episode about the Romulans. So it's not until Kirk's era that they know of the Empire. Also, if it's Starfleet headquarters, which we know is in San Francisco, then where's the Golden Gate Bridge? I mean, I know Magneto moved it slightly to the left, but I'm sure that they would have moved it back at some point. I mean, it was in the right place that the film was right in the place in that film where you have to wear sunglasses to see. Oh, now I get it. Oh, that's it. Star Trek JJ-verse. Oh, and as to beaming or transporting into your own body, the defense calls the original series episode Tomorrow is Yesterday, in which they beamed people back into their own bodies.
Oh, yeah.
But see, that's the future.
Right.
But that was in the past, though.
But then, no, was it the future from Enterprise?
Well, yes. The past from the 31st century.
Except they transported to 1968.
Now, to extreme measures, or as I like to call it, the one where Mike screams at the TV because Julian didn't die.
Yep. That's it.
Colin knows us so well.
That's right. In fact, as you will find out, our good doctor is the only one in Starfleet who is there in the end. The others, finally having had enough of him, take to various assignments to get away from him. One of who goes to the extreme length of hiding in a wormhole for eternity. Well, apart from Kira, but she has to have something to moan about. She is Bajoran, after all. But I digress. This is a very good episode. I was dismayed at Bill's score. No wonder you sent him back to the cartoon universe. For shame.
Bill listens to you, so...
Yeah, it'll be good.
He should send in a reply, Bill.
Not only do we get to see that even when you look at, like, a papier-mâché experiment gone wrong, love comes all. I mean, Kira and her feelings for her flaky boyfriend, and I mean that in the literal sense, are astounding.
He's only flaky for a while.
Yes. Her character has come on in leaps and bounds, and we constantly see many sides to her. People say that Kirk is the maverick character in Star Trek, but I think Sisko is also one. Time and again, he throws the rule book out the window. He turns a blind eye to things he knows are wrong as long as the job gets done. In this one, he sanctions torture. But to me, this does not sit comfortably. Not just that Sisko is going to allow it to happen, but also because the doctor, who has taken an oath, is going to do harm.
I don't know about that, though.
Oh, you don't think they have that oath?
They don't have it now. Doctors don't take that oath.
Right.
So maybe they
reinstated. Well, I mean, in the past, they might have still.
Right. Does hurting and possibly killing Sloane make it right in order to save Odo? The doctor.
Well, I mean... Let's just say that Sloane was a despicable, terrible human being.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Well, there's the other thing is torturing one person worth it to save an entire race or to prevent genocide?
Yeah. Right.
But, you know, as we talked about.
One of the people responsible for the genocide.
Yeah.
It does, you know, give you a little bit of that grain of salt to take.
Just a little bit. Like a giant salt lick.
The doctor is trading one life for another, and he sees nothing wrong with this. Sure, Sloane can be misguided, but he does everything he does to protect the Federation and its people.
That's right. What?
Well, I mean, his version of the Federation and the people that he thinks should be in the Federation, which, you know, is Earth.
Right. Yeah, that's true. The doctor is only doing this to save one life. He's not doing this to cure the Founders as a race. He's doing it to cure his friend, and I think his loyalty is clouding his viewpoint. That's probably true.
When he finds out that it was Section 31, though, he does go on a rant of how could they commit genocide.
Yeah, right, but it's not. The genocide is terrible.
Right. The suicide capsule was a nice touch. The future version on a cyanide tab. But as we know from James Bond, it is not a foolproof method. So instead, we will fry your head. It's much more effective. Well, unless you do it in a medical center. But hey, we tried. Which brings me to the Dreamscape machine. That always reminds me of the Babylon 5 medical device where you hook up to someone and heal them using your own life energy.
That was cool.
Yeah.
It was, but it's actually more like the... machine that Knight 1 and Knight 2 used on the commander to go into his brain and figure out what happened at the Battle of the Line.
Cool. The bromance.
I don't remember that one.
Season one.
The bromance bit, notwithstanding, although now how Miles can love Keiko is beyond me, the components of the show as a whole were very much on the dark side. I half expected someone to say, "Come to the dark side. We have cookies."
That would be mixing Star Trek and Star Wars, and we're not allowed to do that.
Oh. Chris must have loved all the evil goings-on in this one. Coming from the Mirror Universe.
Everything was fine. There's no evil.
As a final thing, I will leave you with a mistake. At the end, in the bar, our two lovers share a beer and the doctor throws some darts. When Bashir throws his third dart, the camera follows it to the board. The other two darts are nowhere to be seen. Cue music from the Twilight Zone.
Maybe they were holographic darts.
Oh, maybe.
Ooh. And they don't need them anymore.
Oh, that totally makes sense. That way nobody, you know...
Yeah, you never have to go. They just reappear in the thing next to you. That's awesome.
Oh, man. We totally need that.
Yep.
Good job thinking about that, Colin.
And they're safe because if they're going to hit somebody, they'll just disappear.
Right. Yep. Well, no, they just continue through them on the trajectory and hit the top.
Oh, my God. That's even better.
See? Holographic darts. It's where it's at.
Yep. Live long and podcast, Colin.
All right. Next up, Ben.
This one is from Jay from Brazil. Hi, guys. Thanks for the warning, but about avoiding the apple. This is a clear example of what goes in mind whenever someone blames J.J. Abrams for trashing the Star Trek. In those moments, my neurons scream, have you ever watched the original series season 3? People still condemn Kirk for intervening and creating a new religion in the beginning of Into Darkness.
What he...
Yeah, when they're running from the volcano.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah, oh. He hasn't seen it yet. But, yeah, basically he does.
They see the ship, and he steals the holy book, and then the natives see the Enterprise, and the last thing as they're leaving is that they're all kneeling on the ground, and they draw a picture of the Enterprise, and they all start bowing to it.
Great. Well, I mean, that's par for the course for Kirk, so.
It is.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's all fun and games if he destroys a religion and the entire way of living of a civilization.
Right.
Yeah.
As a side note, maybe when McCoy said that the red dudes had not evolved in 10,000 years, he reached the numbers by carbonating the soil and habitations of the aliens. Wait, those guys were red, didn't have money, nor had the interest in material goods. Maybe Bones possessed another intention to finish those communists off.
Nice. Oh,
good. So long and prosper. Thank you for the fish, Jay from Brazil.
Oh, perfect.
Wow.
All right. Next up, Carrie.
Hey, we have another one from Colin who says, greetings, one and all. So you took on Apple, and unlike Samsung, you won. I can only assume Carrie had been running some sort of experiment on you all at the time to gauge your reactions to this episode. I mean, why else would she choose it?
That's kind of what we thought.
Yeah.
And I think I
dodged that question.
No, I think I frequently asked you how you were feeling. And
yeah.
Throughout it.
Now be honest. It is for posterity.
Yes. I'll cite you all when I win that really great prize.
That's right.
Kirk does what he does best and kills a computer, but this time he never bothers talking it to death. Oh no, the man who punches you in the face and then says, we come in peace, shoots it. I mean, why? All he had to do was talk the natives out of feeding it or prevent them from feeding it. Just lob a few of them exploding rocks by the entrance and that'll stop the natives from going into the cave. But no,
that's true.
It worked in Who Mourns for Adonis, so it will work here. Use your dwindling energy reserves to shoot at the computer with dwindling energy reserves, and let's see who runs out of energy first. There are some amazing facepalm moments in this one, notwithstanding that Spock once again gets attacked by a plant. We also find out that he comes from a very hot planet, since he has to wear two shirts while on duty to stay warm. Bless him in his little woolen socks.
Oh.
But Spock also seems to be able to shed the needles from his body after getting shot. One minute they are there, next they are gone. Which also brings me to Pav. It reminds him of home, really, because I have never seen anything on the National Geographic Channel in relation to killer plants and exploding rocks in Russia. No, they have like, you know, umbrella, killer umbrellas
there, nice.
That shoot darts. So, I mean... Yes. It's close to plants, right?
Wait, I thought that was Kingsman.
I haven't seen that.
It's good. And they have umbrellas that shoot stuff.
Oh, well, I mean, they did have an umbrella that shot something and enriched. Yeah. Wasn't like enriched plutonium or uranium or something? Like some radioactive thing that...
Yeah, they like just killed somebody with it not that long ago.
Yeah. Like, for reals.
Yeah, in real life. They killed somebody with one of those not that long ago.
Well, wasn't
the penguin
there somebody,
has it.
Wasn't there somebody that did that with ricin, too?
Maybe it was ricin. Yeah. No, I don't think it was ricin. It was definitely some kind of radioactive material, because the guy kind of...
Radioactive ricin?
Oh no. God,
just make it as bad as you possibly can. This is maybe not toxic enough. Let's make it radioactive, too.
Okay, continuing on with what Colin had to say. Boy, but we do get some firsts on this show. For instance, Pav, it's the first time his first name is used.
Oh, really? Wow.
We get a reference to the saucer separation on the ship, which was part of the original script but got cut due to budget restraints.
What? Really?
Oh, I missed that.
Didn't they? I thought they said something about having to, like, separate the ship so that they could escape orbit.
Right, but there wasn't enough energy.
Right.
It wouldn't have done anything.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's why it got cut. Because that's why that thing was put in there, because of budget constraints.
Right.
We also get to see Hutch in his pre-academy days. Now I know why he wore a jacket so much on the show. He never wanted anyone to see his orange arms. Plus, we get to see that if you are an immortal, happy, well-adjusted society, then you should not attack the Enterprise, because Kirk will come down and destroy your lives, along with four red shirts, one of whom he knew because his dad got him into the academy.
Yeah.
I guess dad wasn't too chuffed with his own son then, because Kirk made captain and his son made red shirt. Now, I took up the song challenge, but as my singing voice is about as good as Kirk's diplomatic skills, I will leave it to you, one of you. So here it is. And I'm not going to sing it. Well, yeah, but I will read it.
Yeah, go ahead and read it.
It's Oompa Loompa Dippity Doo. We are surfers and here for a tube. Oompa Loompa Dippity Doo. We did Hawaii 5-0 for you. Oompa Loompa Technologic. Where is the logic in talking about this? Oompa Loompa Spray Tan Skin. Now you know you're orange when your sky is still blue. We had to wear a red Hessian skirt. It made my crotch itch with a verve. Zal gave me cream and an apple a day. He got killed and Kirk went away. Oompa Loompa, now we're alone. Kirk went away and destroyed our home. What do I do with these antenna now? I guess that's what he meant by, you'll figure it out. Live long and podcast. Wow. Oh,
okay, next up, Mike.
All right, our next one is from Jay from Brazil. Hi, guys. I'm a bit confused. Am I right about your show, TNL 179, which comes right after episode 177? What's going on?
Hello? What's the name of our show?
Did you lose one edition in a black hole? Is the future math taught by Brazilian Treasury employees? If you're trying to be original, I'm sorry to tell you that MDM Podcast already did it. They skipped the number 300, only releasing it after the 326th episode.
Oh, bummer.
Wow.
This is what happens when you, like, travel in time. Sometimes, you know, things get out of whack.
Yeah, we're sorry about that. We picked them up for an episode and forgot to drop them off.
For us, on the ship, we released them in order. Unfortunately, we were not chronologically in order in time.
Yeah. Yes. This happens.
In a matter of time, I liked it way more than you guys. Gohan. What? Gohan, it has a...
Did we suddenly go into Dragon Ball Z?
Yeah, I don't know.
And maybe that's some sort of exclamation. Gohan.
It has a time traveler with a twist. Full of fun. I don't know what Gohan. I mean, Gohan, that totally makes me think of Dragon Ball Z. I don't know.
Maybe one of the people in it reminded him of Gohan.
Maybe.
Was there a character, like, in that episode that was, like, Dragon Ball? Was there a Dragon Ball Z episode about that kind of stuff?
No.
No.
All right, well, anyway, he enjoys the time traveler with a twist, which was good. The scientific mistakes I can totally oversee as...
No!
The, As the planet cataclysm was just a means to get you conflicted, Picard fighting his convictions against the lives of the many. My main complaint goes for a ship with a timer to leave without its crew. Not the brightest idea, unless it goes to get some help.
Hey, sometimes the TARDIS leaves.
Well, my thought would have been that when the original crew died, the timer started, and he was able to adjust where it went, but not that it had a timer. So, oh, like, it keeps trying to jump home, and he has to get in there in time and change where it's going.
Yep. Okay,
oh,
so
that's a good one.
That is good. Just to finish, I would like to suggest you expand a little bit the episode name meaning moment to include this season of Doctor Who. Those would be a good challenge.
I've seen one episode of this season, maybe.
Live long and prosper, and thank you for the fifth fish, James J from Brazil.
The fifth fish?
The fifth fish, yes.
1 through 4 were not that good, but no, the fifth one, that one was good.
That one was a winner.
All right, Ben.
And once more from Tekarangalam. Tekarangalam. I still like Brian's pronunciation. Greetings, chieftains of our mighty Technologic tribe. I didn't realize we had that many. It is I, the Takaran Golem, a relic of a bygone era. I don't remember which one, though. Whichever one had all those space vampires flying around. Oh.
That was a bad era.
That was.
I mean, because, you know, like, I hate to say it, but when things fly and they have to relieve themselves, it's always messy.
I thought you were going to say when things fly and they suck.
Well, when they fly and they have to relieve themselves, it kind of sucks.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
Not for them. For everyone else.
Weren't there also nightmare children during that era? I just wanted to thank Matthias for inviting me to his German pool party that involved profuse amounts of glitter. I didn't really understand all that was going on, but everyone seemed happily invested in the proceedings, and what's more wholesome than that? Speaking of bizarre, surreal events beyond description, extreme measures. I actually liked this episode, and despite being a little retroactively disappointed, I kept watching it thinking, really? That's it? Well, let's see where they're going to go with this. And then it did something interesting and enjoyable enough that it didn't matter. Or that I didn't mind. I don't know what I was reading. For example, really? You can lure and capture a Section 31 person that easily? Well, let's see if his friends stop by. Oh, they're going into his mind. Cool. Another example. Really? Sloan's mind is just a DS9 set? Well, let's wait for all that crazy surreal stuff to start boggling the mind. Oh, we're going to learn about Sloan's family? Cool. By the end, really? He just had to remember 3 ingredients? That seems a little anticlimactic. Oh my god, it worked! Odo's cured! I agree. I'll admit, in retrospect, I wish there was more symbolism to the mental world. Maybe in the background there could have been large globes of various planets oddly pressed together. Dark crevices, lacy garments, and strange phallic decorum coming out of the floor, symbolizing his need for sociological imperialistic fascism.
Wow.
I think you need to see the counselor. I'll make it a point. Matter of fact, I think I'm going to bring one in from Temporal Command. Perhaps not living up to the potential is not the same as bad. In fact, for the pittance of a budget they had, they made the most of it, which is a tradition going back to the original series. I did want to say that my older brother had a theory halfway through the episode when Sloan appeared to be dead. He figured that Sloan's still living real-world life must have the pad, and that was Sloan's way of cleverly telling them where to find it. Oh, that would have been cool.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe he meant real-world wife.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would have been cool. Finally, I wanted to thank Matthias again for finding the Glitter Golem, my bill-faced abomination pet project. I don't rightly remember why I built him, but he's making a tremendous help in the bedazzling department, which has been very busy making us mutiny banners. And now I must take leave. Tack out.
Yay! All right. Next up, Carrie.
We should just, you know, like, string together all of Tack's stuff into one giant one. I mean, this is the problem when you release and it's a long time between releases.
Yes, it is.
So this one is also from To Karen Golem, who says, "Hello, senior staff. It is I, the I'm Tech. I just got back from that last away mission and I can't go back. We've lost so many. The plant shot poisonous darts, the rocks exploded, and the fruit tasted like spray paint. Which would have made for a fairly normal away mission, but those little orange creatures kept singing again and again. Some of us swelled into large blueberries, others drowned in chocolate. They just smile and start singing about what we should have done, gloating over our misery. No warning songs. Oh no, the songs were always telling us afterward. Shouldn't have tasted the chocolate. Don't eat the candy we offered you while snickering to ourselves. Should have turned right at the sign pointing left. And some of them didn't make any sense. Crewman Fizz was shot by a vicious sunflower, and they said he should have kept his wedding ring on. Crewman Kip was blown up by a rock, and they sang 30 stanzas about the importance of breakfast. It got to the point where they'd start to hum right before one of us would bite the dust. Cruelly, it actually gave Crewman Plo a heart attack. They sang about brushing teeth. Which actually, you know, that if you don't brush your teeth, it can lead to plaque in your arteries.
Yep.
Just FYI. That's Carrie's FYI. Yes. So, yeah.
Brushing your teeth can help you stave off a myriad of medical problems.
Including heart attacks.
Yep.
I mean, not all of them, but...
But let's not sing about it.
So, I mean, that one does make sense. After a week of stark terror, the rest of us came back. It was a 20% red shirt survival mission, so I guess that means we came out ahead, but the emotional scars will last us a lifetime. Anyway, moving on to the review of the apple. How do I put this? It was an enjoyably bad episode. Unlike, say, the alternative factor where you laughed to cope with the drug-induced insanity before you, or Way to Eden and Plato's Stepchildren, which were rightly banned from being used in prisoner interrogations. This is sit back, relax, and enjoy the bad. There is no pretense that this episode is trying to be any better than it is. Four red shirts right off the bat means you know it'll be frivolously bloody. You know the romance will be awfully cheesy. The parallels to the Garden of Eden could not be more obvious if Kirk walked through the TV and hit you with the Book of Genesis. And the lightheartedness fits in such delightfully inappropriate ways that it's impossible not to join them in an inappropriate good laugh. The tenor of the episode is so consistent that it's rather admirable. At no point does it ever really get much better or worse. It remains a fixed point of ridiculousness and then finds ways to remain there. Maybe I enjoyed it because it showcases so many TOS cliches to such brilliant extremes. I did laugh at the line, "All good comes from Val." It made me think of Futurama on the ancient Egyptian planet. You are now possessions of the great pharaoh, Hermenthotep, bringer of the good aspects of the annual floods.
Yes, the good aspects.
Yes. Finally, I wanted to tell you that I did some digging and I found the original dialogue for the awkward hut conversation scene. Remember, this was rewritten because they thought it was inappropriate for children. You have been warned. And then he says, We can act if we want.
But your friends don't act.
Yeah.
If they don't act, well, there's no friends of mine.
No, they are. My friends don't act. Kirk says, "Gentlemen, speculate. What would happen if someone on this planet died? I mean, there are plenty of cliffs around here. You know, accidents happen." McCoy, "Jim, what are you planning?" Kirk, "Spock, what do you think?" Spock says, "They'd have to perform intercourse. Obviously, the serpent would provide proper instructions. It's in the Starfleet Survival Guide. How to copulate to repopulate. Directive." Kirk interrupts, "Trust me, I know the directive, Spock. And I like what you're thinking, but..." McCoy says, "Jim, this isn't the time to hook up with another alien." Jim says, "Bones, you're not listening. What if all of them accidentally fell off a cliff?" Stunned silence. Kirk continues, "It doesn't have to be a cliff. There are these rocks, too." McCoy says, "Jim, Jim, are you suggesting? Spock says, or we could hold them here in the hut. Jim capitulates. Oh, right. Yes, that'll work too. That will be plan A then. Clearly that was too risque for 60s audiences. Anyway, I must go. I'm going to have the glitter golem chisel out these memories from the away mission. Unless anyone here has experience with brain surgery and or mining. It's a difficult cross-section of skills to find. Tack out. P.S. Oompa Loompas really do freak me out.
All right. So we also have a voicemail that's from Bill. Because way back when we were reviewing Dogs of War, he forgot to send us his rating. So we're gonna play it in here so people can know what he rated Dogs of War. So here we go.
Hey, guys, it's your favorite flat astronaut, the pilot from the animated universe. My name is Bill, and I'm here to tell you what I think of The Dogs of War, Part 8 of the final arc. When we finally get... See, for me, DS9, I didn't catch it every single week, you know? So whenever I was able to catch it, it was a bit of a treat. And I swear to goodness, there were so many times when I'd go like, oh boy, I can catch Deep Space Nine. I'd turn it on and be like, dang, it's a Quark episode. But you got to resolve all arcs, and Quark's got quite an arc. So I should have seen this one coming. But having said that, I'm going to go ahead and give this like a – I'm going to give it a 6.5, 7. I'll decide by the end of the rating here, recording. It's better than solid. I will say that. And my favorite moment of the episode in terms of the Quark arc is when he's talking to Rom and he's spouting off all these traditional Ferengi values, and Rom is just kind of quietly – giving the counter argument of the new way Ferengernar is now going to run, now that his mom has convinced the Grand Negus to hand down his Negus ship, I suppose you'd say, to the not Quark, which was all fun, you know.
Yeah, I thought I was talking to Quark. Yeah, have fun, kids. Let's go to Risha, baby. Hey.
Gotta love Wallace Shawn. But I think my favorite Ferengi in this episode would have to be Jeffrey Combs as doing a two parts here. And my favorite edit is when they're cut from the scene where he's like, you know, massaging Quark's feet or whatever it was, to like a close up of Wayoon on the, you know, on the big screen and on Cardassia. That was just great. You know, cutting between these two characters like that. Other important stuff, you know, at the very end, they decide they're definitely going to attack, and we find out Sisko and wife are going to have a baby. Could this be a demon baby or something, I suppose, would be the concern. I don't know. And, of course, Ezri and the good doctor finally make out. That was a little cheesy with the turbo lift, I got to say. Yeah, so you know what? There you go. I'm gonna give it a 6.5. I know that rounds up to 7, but I can't quite say it's exceptional. I think it's quite good. It's better than solid. And if I was feeling more generous right now, maybe I would give it a 7, but I'm gonna stay with 6.5. Anyway, that's almost 3 minutes of me yammering on here, so I'm gonna get out of your hair and let you get back to your review. Thanks, guys, and live long and podcast.
Okay, and that's it for voicemails.
All right. Any new iTunes reviews?
Nope.
Bogus. All right. You can give us plenty of feedback by giving us a nice iTunes review, by emailing us at...
Please give us an iTunes review.
feedback@treklogic.com. You can even email us voicemails because we love those. You can tweet us at Treklogic. You can find us on Facebook and Google+, and there's a Treklogic forum at treklogic.com, which usually I get through to on my iPad, but something's wrong with my iPad, so now...
Don't go there.
Get my password reset because I don't know what it was.
I've had to do that several times.
I can help you with that, you know, as the ship's computer.
Oh, I thought I'd have to get Admiral Jeff involved.
Oh, and then Mike will know your password. And so it'll be all good.
Good.
He could always change it again after I change it for him.
Then I just have to ask him.
Right. What was my password?
Yeah, then you know his password. And so that means next time you won't have to reset it because he'll just come to you.
Right.
All right, well, thank you for listening to our discussion of feedback. Until next time, on behalf of everyone here at Treklogic, love long and prosper.